This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I've probably upset somebody, right?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Athletics part ownership of this show continues right now here on Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810. Every Tuesday, it's Seth Kaiser. This Wednesday, it's Nate Taylor, also of The Athletic, and one-third of the impeccable Time Czars podcast. Nate, not that you have to throw anybody under the bus, but, like, you'd have to say if you're going to rank your favorite person to do that show with. I think I know your answer, right?
Yeah, of course. It's Danielle, our producer.
Oh. She's great, and that's deserved. Second place, though, is probably...
Okay, I'll say it. It's you.
All right, yeah, take that, Seth. You can listen to the Time Czars podcast with me and Nate and Seth every Monday and Friday if you subscribe to The Athletic, or even if you're not subscribed to The Athletic, just Mondays, you can check out that show with the three of us. It's been really, really fun so far, and I talked about this last week with Seth. People have been, like, weirdly nice about it. Like, it's the nicest anyone's ever been to me online.
Yeah, it's been incredible, and please keep listening, because, like, we're obviously having a ton of fun. But yeah, who knew the internet could be so kind after Twitter has shown us over and over and over again that if you say anything wrong, yeah, they will come get you. So seriously, like, you know, when we dreamed of this even before training camp, we thought it would be fun, and it's been even better than I think all of us have anticipated. So yeah, of course, I love obviously going on your show, and that kind of helped create Time Czars.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that it did. If you haven't listened again, here's the one thing I'll tease you with. Nate has now done a Bill O'Brien and a Bill Belichick impression, and both of them blew my mind. Like, both of them blew me away, and I'm deeply grateful for them. But we also have an actual Chiefs game to talk about, Nate. A football game happened on Sunday, and then guess what? Another one's going to happen this Sunday. It's amazing.
I know, right? Exactly. Like, let's just keep doing this.
Oh, just forever, please. You know what? I'm in on the 18 game schedule. Let's go.
Let's do it. It's so good.
I'm having so much fun. And so very clearly and obviously, we start this conversation talking about Andy Reid's shoes. Because if you haven't read this yet, Nate did a whole piece. I was going to say long form. That's probably, I don't know if it qualifies as long form, but it's like a deep dive into legitimately Andy Reid's shoes. And it's such a good article, Nate. I say this with, you know, great reservation, because I don't want you holding this against me. But it's really good, and the energy in it is crazy. You can hear stuff in Andy Reid's voice and in Travis Kelce's voice. All of that was excellent. So I don't need you to, like, recap the whole thing, because it's about Andy Reid's shoes. People should read it. But was there a snippet from that you were like, oh yeah, this is the best thing that's going to show up in this story as you're putting it together?
Yeah. So for one, thanks for telling your listeners about it. Yeah, I would encourage everybody to go check it out on The Athletic. It's a fun story, and for people who want to know, like, how this comes together, I guess is the best way to explain it. Like, so I spent literally the entire training camp in St. Joseph driving up and down.
Yes.
You know, I would do stories of the day, like, hey, here's the news, and then half my brain was just watching Andy Reid's feet. And his sneakers.
Yeah.
And I just noticed it at OTAs this summer. Like, hey, his favorite sneakers are Nike Air Force One, which is, like, that just takes me back to eighth grade, ninth grade,
right,
when, like, those things are so popular. And so I just thought, like, hey, maybe there's something here. This sounds weird. Can I ask Andy Reid about his shoes? And I sort of told the team that to start training camp. And so when Andy Reid agreed to it, one, my mind was blown, because I'm like, wow, we're really doing this.
Yeah.
And two, Travis Kelce, in the entire article and throughout my five-minute interview with him, was amazing. Just amazing. He is the perfect guy to obviously understand the importance of player-coach relationships. These shoes have, I mean, when you write a story, or when you think you have a good topic to sort of dive into, you really never know where it's going to go. And so that's sort of the beauty and the fun of doing this hilarious thing called sports journalism. And it's like, hey, maybe there's something to this, or maybe there isn't. But what I found out is, like, these shoes are, like, vastly important to not only Andy, but to his players and the style, and understanding, like, connected with people that are not, that doesn't relate to necessarily football entirely.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where it's like, hey, I wrote a story that really had nothing to do about football, and people enjoyed it. And I think that's something that I appreciate. And you know, you never know when these things are going to happen. But Travis Kelce was amazing. I mean, he knows shoes in and out, and so to know that he valued Andy's shoes to that degree, and then was able to speak on it so well after I got Andy in an interview, sort of told me, okay, I guess I need to write this, and I guess I hope people care. And then I found out yesterday that a lot of people do, which is interesting. So yes, Andy Reid is a sneakerhead. That is something no one really knew until yesterday.
And for me, like there are elements of it, like with the Kelce story. Like I don't want to spoil the ending because like I read it that way. Like wait a second, I'm emotionally invested. And there's a little anecdote about Justin Houston that I was like, oh man, like, this humanizes a lot of people in that story. And listen, like you've spent way more time around Andy Reid the last couple of years or whatever, year and a half, however long you've been on the beat, than I have. And I've been around a little bit, but I also have to acknowledge I've been closer than almost everyone listening right now, certainly. And I felt like it added another piece of the puzzle of kind of just understanding Andy Reid, like where he is this really unique character and a really unique figure, not just in the NFL, but just like as a person. And so I don't know if there's anything else to speak on in that regard from the article, but I just thought it was really, really interesting and a really good look at them. Was there anything that they got left on the cutting room floor? You said, oh, I couldn't find a place for this to make it into the story, but I wish I could have.
No, what's in there is pretty much like the gold of it. I mean, everything is good.
Yeah.
You know, there was some debate about, because I interviewed Patrick Mahomes about it, and I got him briefly for a few minutes, and so we were talking about it. And so one thing that, like, fans and readers reached out to me is there were really two questions. It was like, hey, as I reported, there's about five players who have Andy Reid's shoes. Like, not only does Andy Reid have his own Air Force Ones, they are customly made through Alan Wright, the equipment director of the Chiefs, that are made specifically by Nike on demand. So whenever they call, Nike can send him his own pair of sneakers at like a snap of a finger, basically.
Yeah.
And so only five players have his sneaker. And so that is part of what's within the story. I've reported that, you know, Travis Kelce has them, just Houston has them. I would encourage you to read the story. Some people have asked me, who are the other three players? I don't know. No one else has told me.
Oh, like, wow.
And so it's still sort of this, like, symbolic, secretive, like, gesture where it's just man-to-man, you know? And so I appreciate that. I tried to push as gentle and as, I guess, strong as – I mean, look, this is not government documents.
Yeah. So, they are shoes still, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, if this is, like, a way – this truly is a way for Andy to tell you how much he cares about you by allowing his shoes to be your shoes now. And so – the Justin Houston thing, when I learned of that, I was like, wow, this is really, like you said, this is bigger than I anticipated. This is humanizing. And like, this is something that nobody knows about Justin Houston, or the final day of him as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs before he was released in March. So, I don't know who these other three players are. I would love to know that. The people I interviewed, didn't really tell me that, and that's including Andy Reid. Like, Andy Reid's like, hey, I know some of the guys want my shoes. Everybody can have them. So I don't know who the other three people are. The second detail that I found to be really interesting is like, okay, Patrick Mahomes brings this up, and I thought of it on my own, but when I was interviewing Patrick, I was like, what do you notice most about the shoes beyond just the fact that, like, he's the only NFL coach that we know has a deal with, like, Nike Air Force One. And Patrick says his shoes are always clean, which is true.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at him at training camp, during a regular season game, or even in the facility, his shoes are, like, pristine white.
Yeah.
And so Patrick brings this up as to, like, how does he keep his shoes clean? He's on a football field for at least 4 hours a day, specifically at training camp. So does he walk lightly on them, or is there someone – in the back, immediately scrubbing them off when he walks off the field. I had the same thought, and I didn't get to the bottom of that answer either. So it's just like one of those things that you keep that ambiguity in the story because no one really knows. I know that Alan Wright, the equipment director, does take care of, like, all the equipment, including shoes.
Yeah.
So So one assumes that he or someone on his staff cleans Andy Reid's shoes, but I don't really know because, like, again, they don't have to answer every question, and sometimes not having the answer is just as fun as having it.
If I made you guess on the other three people that have them, are they do you believe them to be players, or could it be anyone in the organization?
They are players. I specifically asked how many players have the shoe.
So
now, I don't know about staff members.
Well, if you had to guess the three players that you don't know, and this is a Chiefs-specific thing, right? He wasn't doing this in Philly.
No, he was not doing this in Philly. He had only started doing this, my understanding is, 2 seasons ago.
So if, I mean, it's a relatively recent sample size. I'd like to go ahead and say Alex Smith, but it seems weird to think of Andy Reid giving Alex Smith shoes. Like, I don't. I imagine that if Alex Smith has them, they're in a box in his closet somewhere. But like for Travis Kelce, they're like under a spotlight in his closet.
Yeah, yeah,
so like that's
he called it his vault. I mean, he called it a vault.
Yeah,
like, they're
right.
Definitely going in the vault.
Who else do we envision having a pair of AR1s?
Based on guys' own style preferences, right? Guys
yeah.
who have shoes or guys who you know, like to show their personality through their sneaker wear. I'm guessing Eric Berry and Derek Johnson?
That's good. Yeah, those are good. Those are both really good.
And look, I kind of wanted to ask if the guys were retired. Again, Andy Reid, you know. And you know, this is just like asking him, like, hey, you know, do you think Mecole Hardman's going to play more snaps Sunday? Like, he's not going to answer the question, so he gives me the old, like, well, you know, like, I mean, some guys want them, some guys have them, but like,
Right.
So I wonder, you know, they brought in all those guys this offseason, Dwayne Bowe, Derek
yep.
Johnson, and
Jamal Charles,
yep. all these guys who played under Andy
mm-hmm.
previously. I wonder if any of those guys were able to get in touch with Andy Reid or Allen Wright and say, hey, like, can I get some shoes, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, who knows? I don't know the answer. And that's – there are some stories where I know fans want the answers. And there are some stories, again, where it's just it's just okay to, like, to just have this conversation that
yeah.
we're having. Like,
yeah.
who do you think else has them?
Yeah. I'm glad he didn't decide to try to wiretap anybody or go Freedom of Information Act on trying to find whether players have Andy Reid shoes. It's just great. And the whole thing is fun, and it's relatively inconsequential, although I do think that it, like, it shows you kind of what Andy Reid is like and what his relationship with the players is like. So maybe on some level it does matter to the football on the field, but I just thought it was really fun. It's a really good piece.
Thank you.
So
yeah.
Good job, Nate. You did good.
I try every now and then.
Now, let's go to something where you really mailed it in. Covering the last game the Chiefs played. Oh, God, what just happened? Did someone just collapse? Did a child just destroy something?
I'm just at my home and something fell off the counter. It's okay. I will have to get it back up here, you know, securely in a better manner. It's like, you know, it's just doing things around the house, unfortunately. Did you say I mailed in last Sunday's game?
Yeah. I mean, you worked really hard on this really good story about Andy Reid's shoes, but pretty much mailed in the coverage of the game from Jacksonville. No, you were one of the – I take all of that back. You were one of 18 people who actually saw the entire Chiefs-Jags games.
That's right. You know, the joke I made to a couple people, and I will make now to you, is, hey, you know, Ian Eagle is a great play-by-play man. And for 8 minutes, he wasn't on the air, so
right.
I had to be Ian Eagle on
right.
Twitter.
And I preferred you to Dan Fouts also. It really,
oh,
honestly.
Oh, yes, of course.
That,
yeah.
was, that was a better viewing experience, and I couldn't see what was going on. I was listening to Mitch at Mitch Holthus on 101 and then reading your tweets, and honestly, I felt like I was actually gaining information. You've written about this again in separate pieces on The Athletic, and I know we heard from Reed and Mahomes today, and you know, we now know a little more about Tyreek Hill. We know a little more about Patrick Mahomes' ankle and all of that. If I said, all right, you have to bring all of that together, synthesize all of that to have, like, the biggest development from that game on Sunday, what would it be in your mind?
I think the biggest development from Sunday is that, for right now, Patrick Mahomes is still healthy-ish.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He was a full participant today in practice, so we do know that. That he said that his ankle has felt better since Sunday. Every day it's progressed. So
yeah.
He felt better on Monday. He felt better on Tuesday. And obviously today he was a full participant in practice. That trend should probably continue all the way to Sunday. I'm assuming the team is just going to give him a ton of treatment on Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, he's going to get so many massages and so many ibuprofen pills. And, like, he won't even feel that thing on game day.
Right.
So that's the biggest thing, is that, like, hey, the MVP of the NFL is still projected to play on Sunday and to probably play well against the Oakland Raiders. Beyond that, I just think, you know, a lot of fans will probably be like, hey, we've never seen Tyreek Hill deal with a significant injury in his career until Sunday.
Yeah.
And that's probably the second development, the idea that, like, he's not going to go on IR just yet because the team is optimistic that he could come back maybe after a month or so, you know, anywhere between 4 to 6 weeks. There was a phrase.
Yes, there was.
There was a phrase uttered by Rick Markel today, the team's head.
I'm bracing myself right now in the studio. I'm bracing myself. Just say it.
Team president of health for the Chiefs said basically it's a week to week injury.
Ah!
Which, if you remember last year
when they
rolled out the Eric Berry news week one, where he said it's literally day to day.
Literally.
And then it was literally day to day for 13 weeks.
No.
So, I mean, hey, you know, everybody's body heals differently. Josh, you know, hey, who's to say that Tyreek won't be back in 4 weeks? And who's to say Tyreek won't be back in 4 months? Who knows?
Also, like, Eric Berry's still on a team, and that's wild to me for, like, that's a whole other conversation we can have on a bye week, I guess. But, oh, he said it today, and I almost fell out of my chair. I swear I almost fell out of my chair. Said, like, really, I don't know if he used the word literally again today, but when he said he
had learned his lesson last year. He did not say literally.
Thank God.
Just went to week-to-week injury. Week-to-week.
Week-to-week. Which, like, I mean, listen, if you don't have week-to-week PTSD, that's actually great news, I guess. For the Chiefs, but my goodness, somebody tweeted, I tweeted about it earlier, and someone tweeted me and said, man, this sounds familiar, but I just can't put my Achilles on it.
Oh, jeez.
And
oh my God.
That put me out for a little bit. I had to lay down after reading that tweet.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Whoever did that, nice
line.
Golf clap for you, sir, ma'am.
Yeah, that's a good line. I think you're right, though. Like, those, I mean, the injury-based things are huge for the future, and you know, it seemed like they read in Mahomes a little bit today, more so than they did after the game on Sunday. Kind of downplayed the ankle a little bit. I felt like the team looked legitimately different pre and post injury. I thought the adjustments they made around that were serious and really, really well done. Mahomes today, you know, basically said that he felt like there were a few plays he couldn't scramble quite as much as he wanted to. How much do you think that did affect the offense kind of after that ankle got sprained?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, their best drive in the second half was honestly, it looked like a pretty just ordinary, like, hey, 12 plays, 60 yards, just squeezed the living life out of the Jaguars.
Yeah.
For Patrick, I think only attempted like 4 or 5 passes. All of them are very short. Mm-hmm. So they went from being the most explosive, oh my God, it's a Death Star that just came into our galaxy, from like, hey, we're just going to knife you to death. So it's so different, you know, going from the first drive, I should say this, the first two drives, where Patrick is just like running around, doing no-look passes for God knows whatever reason, you know, throwing 40 yard bomb to Sammy Watkins, who's like wide open, and then he gets injured, and he's like, okay, I can do this whole three-step drop, release it on time, three-step drop, get it to the running back in space, three-step drop, oh, there's still Travis Kelce wide open in the middle of the field.
Yep.
And all this lets you know that he's so much better than half the quarterbacks in this league. It's just crazy.
It's not even close. He looked – I mean, listen, I don't want to go galaxy brain and be like, actually, it's good that he got hurt because he got to try this out sooner. But he straight up, like, he was forced to play with the mobility of Tom Brady, and so he played like Tom Brady. And it's something, man. It's a different kind of Death Star. You're right. It's Death Star to surgical knife to scalpel or whatever. And, man, it's still really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's amazing to watch him play, knowing that, like, when you watch the replay of how he got hit that led to the ankle sprain, I don't think any of us would be like, "Yeah, coach, I'm going back out there."
Goodness.
I'd be like, "Look, let's focus on next week's game." So, I mean, he's tough. He's accurate as all be, and he's still really gifted. Will he scramble on Sunday? That might be the biggest question. That might be a bigger question than will the Chiefs win.
Yeah.
Because as long as he's healthy, I would assume they'd be a touchdown favorite against the Oakland Raiders, even at home with a bum Patrick Mahomes. But again, he by himself is so much greater than the other 21 guys on the field, right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So that gives the Chiefs a huge advantage.
So I'm a little bit, like, nervous because, listen, I've talked about the offense a ton. We've talked about the offense a ton. I want to talk about the offense for the rest of my natural life. But the defense against the Jags, like, Gardner Minshew came out and played pretty well. And you can say that's Gardner Minshew with all of his jock strap stretches and all of that. That story, by the way, my God. I read a little bit of this last night, but there in college he's doing these like armband workouts with sunglasses and a sweatband and his mustache and his jock strap, and then his imagination is all that's left around him at that point. And he seems like an absolute baller. But he looked pretty good against the Chiefs defense that was supposed to look better than I think it did in week one. Did you start hitting any panic buttons, maybe noticing some things? Do you feel like it's fair to be worried right now, or is it just a game?
It's just a game, and that's okay. And they weren't terrible, which I've said on Times R. Like,
yes.
Just don't be terrible.
Yes.
Like, they weren't terrible. And I need to make this point, and I know my buddy, our buddy Seth Kaiser, sort of mentioned this. It was a 37-13 game at one point.
Yep.
And then basically Steve Spagnuolo was like, well, whatever we do for the rest of the game doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So, like, hey, like, you know, pack it in. It wasn't prevent defense, but it was very soft. Like, hey, like, if we do something, great, but you're basically doing it on your own. I'm not going to scheme any more plays.
It wasn't prevent, but it was like preseason defense, basically.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a great way of saying it. So this week will be a real – okay, here's where we are. Where are we now with the Chiefs defense? Because Derek Carr looked amazing Monday night.
That was going to be the next thing. It's like, hold on, did Derek Carr look good? He did. He looked good.
He did. And it wasn't like Chris, you know, Harris isn't a good corner. He is a good corner.
Yeah.
Von Miller and Bradley Chubb are good pass rushers. Like, like what? Like,
yeah.
He destroyed them.
I don't get it.
So,
I don't know what happened.
So let's say, like, if there's 2 weeks of Derek Carr being that good, then yeah, I would start to get a little concerned if I'm like a Chiefs fan with the understanding of where the defense is and where it has to improve. But as far as week one goes, hey, they got a sack, they got two turnovers, they knocked out the starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think most fans will take that,
you
know, on a more consistent basis than what we saw last year, which was them getting ran over, not getting off the field on third down. And when you get in the red zone, like, just keep them to a field goal. Like, limit the damage. And that the unit did that last Sunday. And you hope they'll do that this Sunday, because Leonard Fournette's good. And it appears that this Josh Jacobs kid, the rookie out of Alabama, is also very good. So they've got some weapons that the Oakland Raiders can use to keep the defense honest. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they perform with a full starting quarterback versus – basically, Damian Wilson telling me in the locker room after the game on Sunday, yeah, I didn't watch any film of Gardner Minshew. I didn't know who he was. It's just like, okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
I know you're telling me this because you won, but you're also like, would you tell me this if Gardner Minshew threw for 4 touchdowns?
No.
Like, I don't know. But
no.
He was basically like, yeah, all I watched was film of Nick Foles. Why did guys know when I watched Gardner Minshew on tape? So
right.
I was like, fair point. Fair point.
No, it totally is. And, like, I think that the sanity that you brought there actually makes a lot of sense. Like, they knocked out the starting quarterback, two turnovers, a sack, and we're better in the red zone and all of that. Like, that I'm good with. I'm wondering if part of this is on me, like, maybe buying a little bit too deep into this defense getting so much significantly better. But the thing for me is, like, there's something really obvious that I think everyone's probably rightfully talking about. The cornerback group is sketchy. Like,
yep.
I don't think Charvarius Ward is probably ready for prime time. Kendall Fuller had the weirdest training camp on the team, and wasn't, you know, he got beat pretty badly against the Jags. Bashaud Breeland looks pretty good, but that's like, you know, you feel like you hit on one of three there at least. Mo Claiborne's coming back pretty soon, but then it's Rashad Fenton and Tre'Mond Smith, except for now maybe Tre'Mond Smith's the receiver again, because that dude is playing everywhere. Like, so with all of that out there, like, that group, obviously, Brett Veach isn't surprised that group doesn't look great. He invested really heavy, though, into this pass rush. which I'm not going to have to, I don't have to go through all the moves, I've done that 1,000 times. We all know they went expensive in that pass rush and really overhauled it. At the very least, maybe you don't look back to week one as much, but going forward, is it not fair to say the pass rush has to be even better than it was in week one to make this defense be as good as it needs to be? Or does it not need to be that good because Patrick Mahomes' legs both work still?
No, it needs to be better. They need to get more consistent pressure, right? There's only two plays that are memorable from the defensive line perspective. Maybe three, because I guess Frank Clark's garbage interception.
You remember that because you saw it.
Because I saw it, yeah. No one else saw that live. Again, I an eagle over here telling you what happened from the Jacksonville press box. So there's really only two plays. You know, the third down touchdown that Nick Foles throws, that's memorable because, one, Kendall Fuller got beat, and two, at least Chris Jones hit him as he released the ball, which of course led him to miss the rest of the game. And I guess Nick Foles had surgery on Monday. Mm-hmm. And then the second snap is in the third quarter where, you know, because Chris Jones got double teamed, that gave Emmanuel Ogbah a one-on-one situation to get a sack on Gardner Minshew. And so those are the two plays you remember the most. They weren't terrible against the run, but they do need to get – they need to make Derek Carr think, right? They need to make him sort of scramble because against Denver, I will say this, the dude was great. Like, he knew he was never sacked. And again, that's Nick – you know, that's Nick Chubb. And that's Von Miller. Those are, like, just as comparable as Alex Okafor and Frank Clark. So if those guys get a sack of Derek Carr, that will be good progress compared to what they showed last week where, you know, Nick Foles was okay for as long as he was out there. And then, obviously, Gardner Minshew presented a little bit of more mobility than what they sort of probably anticipated when he came into the game.
I'll use this as another opportunity to promote Times Ours one more time with me, Nate, and Seth Kaiser. One of the other things Nate does, along with impressions, is he gets names wrong all the time. And earlier, you called Bradley Chubb. But that time, you called Bradley Chubb Nick Chubb, the running back in Cleveland.
There's too many names.
There's too many. And it's always so good. And I promise, I only bring it up because I don't want anyone to tweet either of us and be like, does Nate actually think that Nick Chubb is a pass rusher for the Broncos? No, man. He we're talking on radio, and he said the wrong name, and it's not a big deal. But I'm saying that I know he said Jody Foster that one time.
Yeah, of course. And that's the first time that I got somebody on the actual Chiefs roster name wrong. It's always the opponent's name that I get wrong. Which, again, is why I'm not really Ian Eagle, because you have to get everybody's name right if you do that job.
That job seems impossible, by the way. Like, if you get a look at that, the wizardry that Mitch Holthus does, to mention him for the second time, that, like,
Lord.
He's got these play sheets out in front of him. You think Andy Reid's got a big play sheet? Mitch has, like, four of them, and, like, people holding note cards in front of his face and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Okay, well, here's the last thing on the defensive side. We'll let you go. Nate Taylor of The Athletic, if you haven't picked that up by now. The linebacker group is the only thing that I feel like we haven't really talked about. Safeties seem like they were doing some good things, and I talked about this with Seth some. We talked about the podcast some. We're like, there's a couple of plays there from Juan Thornhill and Tyrann Mathieu. Just simply that group being non-apocalyptic is like a 1,000,000% improvement upon last year.
Right.
But also, like, we've talked very little about the linebacker group. Also, the fact that Reggie Ragland was inactive in that game on Sunday. And while it wasn't amazing, they didn't hold Leonard Fournette to 20 yards rushing on 10 carries or anything, I didn't really notice them being bad. And again, I'd argue that's a really big improvement over last year.
Yeah, and I still don't know the linebacking situation. I mean, that's something to ask Steve Spagnuolo before tomorrow's practice. But, I mean, Reggie Ragland, who knew he was not going to play week one? I mean, he was your starting middle linebacker for the AFC Championship game last year.
Yeah.
One guy I have been impressed with, and he had perhaps the biggest play of the game for the defense, was Damian Wilson.
Yes.
This little-known linebacker from Dallas who was mostly playing in, like, you know, Sean Lee's, you know, shadow, basically.
Yeah.
He started on Sunday, played really well, didn't have really any mistakes, didn't miss any tackles, and then he stripped Leonard Fournette of the football in the third quarter. The Chiefs turned that around into 7 points. That basically makes the game, like, the game's no longer competitive.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that phrase because Steve, you said that phrase before the generators blew out and you didn't see your beloved team for 8 minutes. That being said, it's really up to Anthony Hitchens, Damian Wilson, and a little bit of Deron Lee, or Darren Lee, excuse me, to get this team to be whole. Yeah. But I also have just as many concerns from a health and depth issue as I have with cornerback, right?
Yeah.
We've said it on Times R. It's like if Rashad Breeland, Kendall Fuller, or even Javarius Ward get hurt, send a prayer because I don't know who's coming off the bench. And I feel that's the same way at the linebacker position, especially if Reggie Ragland is going to be inactive or like a healthy scratch. Like that just seems weird to me. So, you know, they have two young guys in Ben Neiman and Dorian O'Daniel who are the backups right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the three starters that I mentioned, Wilson, you know, Hitchens, and Lee, those guys got to stay on the field. They got to stay productive. They at least did that for 1 week. I don't know how they're going to, how consistent they're going to be over a course of a 16-week schedule if the pass rush doesn't get there all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's where the Chiefs put their chips. The Chiefs put their chips this offseason on the pass rush and the safeties, and it means those position groups have to be as good as advertised because they didn't spend that way anywhere else. So, yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. And also, we successfully talked about the defense and didn't just talk about the offense for 30 straight minutes, which we definitely could have done. I feel proud of ourselves. Thank you, Nate. It's always great to talk to you. I'll talk to you again on Friday over there, over on The Athletic on Time Stars. Again, if you haven't subscribed to The Athletic yet, you're missing just so much. And we have Seth here every week and Nate all the time, and the podcast has been great and everything. So I don't know how much more I can preach the gospel of The Athletic, but I'm trying. I'm trying, and if I can't convert you, you're just not paying attention.
I agree. But again, thank you for having me on, and see you on Friday.
Sounds great. I'll see you on Friday, and I will be ready for your analysis of whatever shoes I'm wearing.
Sounds great.
Nate Taylor of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at @ByNateTaylor. More on Almost Entirely Sports right after this.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Barf, booger, poop.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank you, Nate Taylor of The Athletic, for joining us. Again, I cannot recommend enough that you read his article about Andy Reid's shoes. Again, I know that sounds like I'm making a joke, but I'm dead serious. One of my favorite things I've read this year. Also, because, you know, I just don't read. I read the headline and talked to Nate. No, I read the whole thing. I read every word of that story and enjoyed it immensely. Up on The Athletic. I saw this happening, and I don't think we ever really talked about it yesterday, but the Chiefs cut Byron Pringle, and it came up today. I know this is super chiefy, but, like, hang with me for a second. The Chiefs released Byron Pringle whenever they reactivated DeAnthony Thomas, and everyone was like, what the hell? This fantasy receipt is so good. Everybody loves Byron Pringle. Did I become Elmo?
No, it wasn't nowhere near Elmo.
I disagree. I think somewhere in here was getting close to Elmo.
No.
Right here is Elmo from hell. It's Elmo in hell. It sounds like a mix between Elmo and Pennywise from It, which you haven't seen yet, but he sounds kind of like this. I don't know what happened there.
Wow.
Anyway, people were furious because Byron Pringle's the best. And, oof, boy, that's rough. On my ears and my throat.
And on my soul.
Byron Pringle! And so the Chiefs cut him to activate DeAnthony Thomas off the suspension, exemption, all that list. And listen, I was surprised because I thought DeAnthony Thomas was probably going to take Tre'Mon Smith's spot because Tre'Mon Smith was probably going to get cut. But then Marcus Kemp got hurt. And then DeAnthony Thomas would basically take that spot, and Tre'Mon Smith just could not find a spot on this team because he was a corner, and then he was a running back, and then he was back to corner, and then today Andy Reid mentioned that he could run at receiver some. So he's just playing every. He's kind of the jack of all trades, master of none situation at this point for Tre'Mon Smith. And like, I've got nothing against him at all. In fact, I think it's kind of a fun story if he continues to make the team as like a super utility guy. So if he actually does make the team, it's going to largely be because of his. I mean, it's all because of his special teams abilities. But I thought DeAnthony Thomas would be their main gunner. But right now, it looks like Dave Toe wants to have two of them. If Tre'Mon Smith doesn't get cut whenever they reactivate Mo Claiborne after week 4, I'll be really surprised. I think that roster spot's just too valuable, and then maybe somewhere in that time you find someone else who can. Rashad Fenton needs to be able to be your gunner. your second gunner. But I don't know. Maybe not. Dave Tobe has a lot of sway there, and that's whatever. Fine enough. But they cut Byron Pringle, and people were, like, really upset on Twitter. And someone reported, and forgive me for not even having my facts straight on this front, I believe someone reported that the Chiefs' plan was to actually eventually bring back Byron Pringle. I don't even know if he has practice squad eligibility or if this is actually bringing him back to the active roster at some point. But it would be to bring him back if he cleared waivers. And so many people were like, oh, well, why would you expose him to waivers? The Jets just lost a guy. They just traded four to Demaryius Thomas. Clearly, they're...
Oh, no, the Jets.
They're beaten down. But, you know, clearly, oh, they're a landing spot for Byron Pringle. They're going, oh, lots of teams need receivers. Well, that's clearly a landing spot for Byron Pringle. Like, not to be incredibly exaggerating this point, but, like, it felt like a lot of people were assuming that Byron Pringle was going to get half a dozen waiver claims on him and that he would very clearly be starting for some other team next week. Nobody claimed him. Byron Pringle went through waivers unclaimed. Could he still get interest from another team? Maybe. But the thing that sort of brought to the forefront for me has nothing directly to do with Byron Pringle. He's shown some really nice little flashes, and all of that still, the Chiefs are giving roster spots to Tre'Mont Smith and De'Anthony Thomas over him, and a million offensive linemen, by the way. What's happening here that I find interesting is the amount of time that fans look at their own players with a tremendous amount of belief in their potential and a tremendous amount of value, and frankly, overrate your own guys. Fans tend to overrate their own guys. That's, again, like, it's just sort of how it works. And it makes sense, right? You see these players up close. You're paying attention. You know when the Chiefs drafted Rashad Fenton. You know where he went to college. You know what he did in training camp. We've talked about him on your local sports talk radio station, right? Certainly we talked about Byron Pringle. Hosts talk about him. We talk about him with the guests and everything. What are you giggling at, Beards?
Every time you say his name, I can't not think about him with the Pringles man face.
That's why he's so valuable.
Every time.
He doesn't have the beers. Don't be silly. The Pringles man is a caricature, and it's a cartoon, and it's not a human face. I imagine him just with the cartoonishly large mustache.
That's why he passed all those waivers. He doesn't have that magical mustache.
You think the Chief made him hand that in with his playbook? There was a tweet from Dylan on Twitter. It was an excellent follow, at DVLank. So when I was 10, I thought Mark Tian was an amazing baseball player. Since then, I've never trusted myself to evaluate talent. The players you're closer to, you're going to evaluate more highly. And sometimes, I guess, you could be more critical. So, like, whenever the Chiefs traded Eric Murray for Emmanuel Ogbah or Parker Anger for Tre'Varius Ward, those are teams going like, yeah, we're too close to these guys. I don't know what I'm even looking at anymore. Beard is showing me a picture of a drawing of a Pringle man on a two-dimensional cartoon female body.
Well, let's see if it was. Now
that made it sound like I was trying to avoid saying that it was naked, and it's not.
It's not.
It's not. It's not not safe for work. It's just a challenging image. It just... What did you Google to make that happen if someone wanted to find this?
Pringles man.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's the fourth thing there.
It's basically a two-dimensional drawing of Jessica Rabbit, but with the Pringles man's head. Fair?
You're welcome, Internet.
I'm not thankful.
I didn't know they were the fourth most sold chips.
Okay, hold on. How far does the list go?
It just says four. It's just via Wikipedia.
You don't have the full list?
It's just the fourth most popular snack brand.
We got 15. We got 15 minutes left. Find me snack rankings. I want to guess. We can finish the show with it here in 5 minutes. But I want snack rankings. I do not want you to tell me any of them right now.
No.
I don't want you to tell me about any of them right now. I want to guess snack rankings next segment. Okay? You've got the rest of this segment and the commercial break.
Best selling chips.
Make it happen.
Top 10. Is this from this year? No, it's 2013. Get out of here, fake list.
2013 might be as good as we get. How often do you think they do a chip census?
They have one for like every state from this year, but that's not what I want.
Are those ones where it's like it's all different for each state?
Yeah.
Can you give me Kansas and Missouri to sort of wet my whistle?
Maybe. If this list decides.
Okay, I'm gonna finish my point.
Wow, Doritos for both.
Oh.
Wow. Really?
Well, that sort of spoils my guesses.
This map of the United States is very Doritos heavy with a couple Cheetos, and that's it.
I don't know if I would have guessed Cheetos.
No.
I feel like you've kind of blown your ability for me to joke the guess the rankings.
Cheetos are underrated, by the way. They're addicting.
Regular.
Like, I don't want them all the time.
Are you ready for this?
When I have them, they're like, oh, these are good.
Regular Cheetos are the third best type of Cheeto, maybe fourth. I thought for sure you were going to fight me on this, Beards, and you just let that happen.
I don't think I've ever had anything other than the normal Cheetos, so.
Cheetos Puffs, excellent, but I have it 4. Regular Cheetos 3, Jalapeno Cheetos are 1, actually, and then the Flamin' Hot Cheetos are number 2. Can I finish my point about Byron Pringle, about Byron Cheeto? Fans typically... I'm saying overvalue, and it's not, like, really, really aggressive, but I think if you're closer to a player and you've seen your team invest in that player for a long period of time, you've seen your team pour resources and time into that player, you're going to go, oh man, Byron Pringle's going to take over the world and the Chiefs are going to miss out on him. That sucks. You're just too close. If any other team in the league cut their fifth or sixth receiver, especially if you're adjusting for Kemp being ahead of him on the depth chart, which he was, you just wouldn't make anything of it. You wouldn't notice unless it was at an extreme position of need. And even then, the Jets needed a receiver, so they traded with the Patriots for Demaryius Thomas. Which, by the way, do you know how I know the Patriots don't think Demaryius Thomas is any good anymore? They not only traded him, they traded him to the Jets in the division. For basically nothing. It was also apparently the only team Bill Belichick hadn't made a trade with before. So that is some good trivia. I don't know if that includes with him trading with the Patriots or not. I'm not sure. Doesn't really matter. Anyway, best of luck to Byron Pringle. I didn't mean for the segment to be about you not mattering. But it accidentally happened. All right, whenever we come back, we'll close up shop for, it's going to be for the week for us here on AES. Obviously, the rest of 810 will go on, but really, if we're not here, I mean, does it really go on? Or are we just going through the motions? Now, we'll wrap up our week whenever we come back. Beards, what is your level of confidence in some snack rankings?
I've got a couple. They're not great, though.
Feels like a good way to limp into the end of the show.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Best, like fast food delivery pizza chain. Beards.
Fast food delivery pizza. I usually just go with Pizza Hut.
That's usually what I go with, too.
Guys, the answer is Domino's. You guys both lost.
Domino's is good. Domino's is better than East.
Domino's has stepped it up, though.
Yeah, they got that garlicky crust.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's
good stuff.
God, I love this sports show.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We've given you 2 very chiefy, very sportsy hours here on Almost Entirely Sports tonight. No complaints. But with that in mind, we now rank chips. Beards, I'm going to need you to give us something that fills about a minute of content and perfectly encapsulates this ranking. Wow, what a good original production.
Why, thank you!
You have a list of top 10 selling chips?
Yes, this is from PotatoChipsMachine.com.
Sounds so fake.
Are
they flavors or total brands?
Brands.
So Doritos is just one of them, right? Doritos has to be on the list.
It's not. Now I question the validity of this.
I'm going to just give you 10. I'm going to say names and you tell me where they are on the list, okay?
Okay.
Doritos.
Not on here.
Fritos.
No.
Cheetos.
No.
Lay's.
Number 1.
Ruffles.
Number 2. I question
Sun Chips.
No.
Those spicy ones, the kettle cooked ones. No. Okay, I don't know.
Cape Cod?
Give me 10 to 1.
Number 10, Golden Flake. Number 9,
not over Doritos. This list is garbage. Go to top 10 ranked chips by eaters.
Number 1, Cheetos.
No! You asked before the segment. You said 10 to 1 or 1 to 10. I said obviously 10 to 1.
Number 7, Lay's Classic Potato Chips.
7?
Number 4, Lay's Barbecue Chips. Number 2, Ruffles Cheddar Sour
Cream.
Number
2?
Number 3, Ranch Cool Doritos. Number 5, Doritos.
Ranch Cool, is that what they're called?
Number 6, Pringles Sour Cream and Onion. 8, Lay's Sour Cream and Onion. 9, Original Pringles. We have 30 seconds left in the segment.
The show.
That too.
You just took a bag of chips from a sandwich shop.
By the way, Wavy Lays aren't on this list. That's disgraceful.
Put the bag in your hands and then just crushed that bag in your hands and chip crumbs just went everywhere all over this segment.
Number 12 was Funyuns.
How long was the list?
That's huge.
Thanks to Nate Taylor for joining us. We'll be back on Tuesday. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.